what man-made injury and man-made pain and man-made evil looks like. When you shoot off the legs of a whole young population, you shoot off the arms, you do it for one reason, not to defend yourself, but to tell the occupied, this is what's going to happen to you if you pick up anything to try to confront us. A stone, a tire, a gun, whatever, we will do this to you.
The assault on the medical facilities is therefore very much part of the sinister plot to eliminate Palestinian resistance.
The level of medicine that is practiced in Gaza, it's superb. It's at and above the level that I have in my university hospital. But they have been strangulated for 16 years of siege. They have been denied supplies, spare parts, new instruments, trolleys, just to repair what they have because of the siege. Because the occupier, they do not want the Palestinians to have anything close to.
Joining doctors and medical workers here, Dr. Gilbert noted that Israel's war crimes on hospitals will continue, especially because of the impunity under which it acts with the full cover of the West. Outside the world-famous Red Cross Children's Hospital here, Dr. Gilbert handed out roses in memory of Palestinian children massacred by Israel. While he's barred by the Zionist regime from saving lives in Gaza, he's trying to spread the message of resistance thousands of kilometers away at the tip of Africa. Hassan Sirip, Cape Town.
President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said his country will not allow the issue of Israel's nuclear weapons to be dropped from the global agenda, saying the European country's support to Israel is due to what he called the shame of the Holocaust. On the U.S. support of the regime, the Turkish president said that we are not surprised by the backing provided to Israel's lies by those who occupied Iraq on the pretext of nuclear and chemical weapons.
Israel openly admits and confesses to having nuclear weapons, but neither the United Nations Security Council nor the International Atomic Energy Agency launches an investigation. The nuclear weapons issue is not an ordinary issue on which one can just remain silent. Those who don't speak out against Israel today cannot criticize other countries in the future.
Earlier this week, Erdogan had said Israel must be tried at the ICC, vowing to use all available means to ensure that impartial punishment is delivered to the regime's crimes. Many accuse Erdogan of always condemning Israeli atrocities and giving warnings without taking any concrete actions against Tel Aviv. Turkey has not yet cancelled its gas deal with Israel and also hasn't closed its embassy in Tel Aviv. The majority of Turkish people want their government to fully cut ties with Israel. The nation criticizes Erdogan for threatening and condemning, while in reality, he maintains good political and economic relations with Israel. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
The ceremony has been held at the representative office of Hamas movement in Tehran to commemorate Ahmed Ber, the vice speaker of the Palestinian Legislative Council and a member of the Hamas movement, who was martyred during Israeli attacks in the Gaza Strip. The ceremony was attended by Hamas representative in Tehran, Khaled Qadoumi. A number of Iranian military and state officials, including members of the Iranian parliament, were also present at the ceremony.
The martyr, Sayyid Ahmed Bahar, he's an iconic struggling figure in Palestine, and he is a statue at the level of the importance of Palestinian issue. He was one of the brothers and fellows of Sheikh Ahmed Yassin, the founder of the Hamas movement, and he used to be a straightforward, a state man, and he is a transparent fellow when he is to address the Palestinian issue. He used always to address it in a very solid, bold, and straightforward fellow.
Martyr Ahmed Bahr was a great personality who stood against the Israeli aggressions until his last moment of life and did not flee his homeland. What Israel has done in the occupied lands has proved to the world that it is an aggressive regime which is just killing children and women in order to protect itself. But we warn Israel that we will sue the case at international courts and will bring the main perpetrators to justice. With all these ongoing Israeli atrocities, Israel will definitely be the main loser of the war and will collapse.
Since October 7th, Israel has bombed much of Gaza to rubble, ordered the depopulation of the entire northern half of the strip, and made around two-thirds of Gazans homeless. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs said Israeli attacks had destroyed or damaged at least 45% of Gaza's housing units.
The resistance of Palestinians, especially resistance forces against the Israeli occupying regime, was a big slap in the face of the Zionist regime. The brutalities of the Israeli forces show that they have no other option but to kill children and women because they cannot stand against resistance forces. This is the beginning of the collapse of the Zionist regime, and because of its atrocities in the Gaza Strip, this regime has been hated and detested by world people more than ever before.
International officials say a humanitarian crisis for the 2.3 million residents of Gaza is entering a new, more dire phase as the Israeli war continues. Palestinian Resistance Front says despite all Israeli atrocities in the occupied lands, resistance will continue until the full liberation of Palestine from the clutches of the Israeli regime. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
Yemen's Navy forces capturing an Israeli-linked ship in the Red Sea. The operation is the first of its kind. Yemen's military spokesperson confirmed the operation is part of a military effort to end the Israeli regime's genocide in Palestine.
We, the armed forces, renew our warning to all ships belonging to the Israeli enemy or any ships associated with them. You will become a fair target for us. All nations need to take steps to ensure their nationals who work in the Red Sea abstain from any work with Israeli ships or any ships associated with Israeli businessmen. Yemen's armed forces reaffirmed their commitment to continuing to target the Israeli enemy until the aggression and the gruesome atrocities committed in Gaza come to an end.
The capturing of the Israeli-linked ship was the first official military operation by Yemen's naval forces in the Red Sea near Bab el-Mandeb. Bab el-Mandeb is a strategic international shipping lane that makes up almost 90% of Israel's imports and exports traded in the global market. Yemeni officials have praised the seizing of the ship.
I would like to congratulate our Navy forces for their accomplishment in capturing the Israeli ship. This was not a small operation. This operation will certainly boost the morale of the fighters in Gaza.
Israeli military officials have stated they have plans to attack Yemen following weeks of Yemeni drones and ballistic missile attacks, which targeted the heart of the Israeli regime.
Well, the White House has responded to Ansar Allah's capture of the Israeli vessel, calling for the immediate release of the ship and all of its crew. However, the leader of Yemen's revolution, Sayyid Abdel Malik al-Houthi, stated in his latest speech that Yemen is not a nation that takes its orders from the U.S. Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.
On Monday, the Italian capital hosted a sit-in to commemorate the children who have been killed in Gaza after 7 weeks of unrelentless Israeli bombardments. More than 5,600 minors have died as a result of the ongoing ruthless Israel's military assault. The death toll has surpassed 13,300 so far, including over 3,500 women, with 30,000 more people wounded, according to the Hamas-run health ministry in the Gaza Strip. The Rome sit-in took place on World Children's Day, with the participants calling for an end to the war in Gaza, where children's rights are being violated daily.
The West is with Israel. That's why nobody says anything about the slaughter of children. It's unbelievable. Hospitals and houses are bombarded, and nobody does anything.
Italy has commercial and military agreements in place with Israel, and that's why we don't do anything. Zionism is racism. As a result, Palestinian kids are being considered second-class victims.
The sit-in held in Rome was dubbed Our Shameful Charter on the Rights of the Child, referring to a United Nations convention first issued in 1924 and successively reviewed to protect children's rights worldwide. According to the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of the Child, all children shall be protected against all forms of cruelty. However, a growing number of people in the international community believe that the bodies that are established to protect such rights, like, for instance, the International Criminal Court, have a selective and biased approach to the implementation of international law.
Killing children means killing hope to live in a peaceful and secure world. There are hundreds of UN resolutions and international right norms that Israel has never, ever observed.
During the sit-in, people brandished placards and banners reading "Our martyrs are not just numbers" and "Under Gaza's rubble, the West has buried its humanity." No Italian politicians nor mainstream media reporters attended the initiative. Max Civili, Rome.
Thousands of Pakistanis took to the streets in a solidarity march, fervently expressing their condemnation of the Israeli atrocities against the Palestinian people in Gaza.
It's not the silence from the world, it's only silence from our governors, our rulers. The people are here everywhere and all over the world. So the people are with the Palestinians.
Down the occupation!
There were chants of solidarity as passionate individuals from all walks of life gathered to voice their concerns for Palestinian lives and express support for their rights.
As a mother and as a countrywoman, I am very much upset by seeing all this. I can't sleep. It's very painful. It is a genocide and it should be stopped.
Reacting to the continuing Israeli actions in Gaza, Pakistanis expressed support for Palestinians, not just through marches, but also through aid and financial assistance. Aid agencies are calling for urgent action and support, and also demanding the immediate opening of the Rafah border crossing. Humanitarian groups have been sounding the alarm, predicting a potential deterioration of the crisis in Gaza.
The Rafah border should be immediately open, and the aid should be delivered immediately to the people of Gaza. So far, very little aid is gone. 1,000 container is the daily requirement at Gaza. More than 1 million people have dislocated from their homes. There is a very big humanitarian crisis. Food is required, tent is required, blanket is required, medicine is required.
Meanwhile, citizens across Pakistan are stepping up their commitment to the boycott campaign against pro-Israeli businesses. The movement has garnered widespread support and engagement.
By participating in marches of solidarity and extending aid to those affected, Pakistanis are vehemently denouncing what they see as war crimes committed by Israeli forces in Gaza and sending a strong message of empathy and support for the people of Palestine. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is under mounting pressure as protests against the Israeli onslaught of the besieged Gaza Strip enter a sixth week. Demonstrators underline that it's not just the U.S. president and Israeli prime minister behind the killings of thousands of people in Gaza, saying that their government is also complicit in Israel's atrocities.
We're seeing an intensification of our people's struggle. Zionism is falling in front of our eyes. People are refusing to believe Zionist lies about the Palestinian people, about Gaza. Our numbers are growing every single week. We are seeing people all across the world take up more intense forms of direct action, refusing to be quiet, even though 6 weeks in, the Canadian government and Western governments have not called for a ceasefire, continue to send weapons to the Zionist state.
The International Center of Justice for Palestinians has announced its intention to seek the prosecution of four Canadian officials, including the Prime Minister. The organization says it will pursue all appropriate courses of action to hold them accountable before the International Criminal Court for supporting the Israeli regime.
So this case is part of a larger international collaboration to bring charges for aiding and abetting against Canadian officials who have been complicit with Israeli war crimes. All of them in their own way have been either acting or failing to act in a way that is benefiting the Israeli armed forces with great intentionality. And what we see right now is we see a situation where arms are still being shipped from Canada to Israel while it's carrying out war crimes. We see money being misappropriated from so-called charitable organizations here and being sent over to assist the occupation forces. We also see the government here failing to do anything at all to stop recruitment for the Israeli military, which is also happening right now.
Activists are calling for an immediate ceasefire in the Palestinian territory to prevent further loss of life and say that Ottawa must cancel all arms export permits to Israel and require the regime to fully comply with international law.
So we refuse for our Canadian leadership, the members that we elected, to be complicit in the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians. We demand that it imposes an arms embargo on Israel and that it holds it accountable to the numerous international law violations and war crimes that it has committed, not only the past 42 days, but for the past 75 years of occupation.
If the politicians and the media will not listen to us, then we will make it impossible for them to ignore us. We will not allow for business to go on as usual while a genocide takes place against our people in Gaza.
These mass protests demonstrate that people here and around the world no longer believe Israel's propaganda as people from across the country prepare for next week's national march on Ottawa. Camila Escalante, Toronto.
Another pro-Palestinian demonstration has taken place in the Yemeni capital Sana'a in solidarity with Palestinians and their resilience in the face of the Israeli aggression. Protesters also expressed support for the Yemeni government's decision to continue targeting Israel with drones and ballistic missiles. They stressed that this is a battle between good versus evil.
This is a battle against the heads and masterminds of disbelief, at the head of which is America and Israel, the great Satan and the cancer in the body of the Muslim world. By the will of Allah, victory is near.
14 nations wages airstrikes against us and all fail to deter us as we continue to fight today. We do not fear them as long as Allah is with us. We tell them that no matter how much you plot, Allah will turn their plots against them.
Last week, the Yemeni army confirmed they are able to target Israeli ships in the Red Sea and any other location. The army also stated they will target Israeli ships heading toward occupied Palestine or any other country. The Ansarullah military says its moves against Israel are part of efforts to pressure the regime in Tel Aviv to put a halt to the atrocities against Palestinians.
Yemen's armed forces will not hesitate to target all Israeli ships in the Red Sea or at any location within our reach. Yemen's armed forces will not stop launching attacks against Israelis until the regime's aggression on our Palestinian brothers ends.
The government in Sana'a believes these military moves could lead to a full-scale war with the U.S. and the Israeli regime. Despite that, Yemen leaders believe war has been permitted against those killing Muslims and forcing them out of their land.
Israel's economy is heavily dependent on imports and exports traded through Yemen's crucial Bab al-Mandab Strait. This comes as the Ansarullah movement has announced it will not allow any Israeli shipments to pass through this strait as long as the Tel Aviv regime continues its acts of aggression in occupied Palestine. Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.
In the limelight.
United Nations appointed independent human rights experts are saying police and the criminal justice system in the United States require urgent reform to eradicate systemic racism against people of African descent. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Bloomberg News Agency has covered this story and tells us more. A United Nations Special Rapporteur has expressed shock at the mutually reinforcing manifestations of systemic racism in the United States, saying the country is at a critical juncture in the fight against racism. K.P. Ashwini, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Contemporary Forms of Racism, Xenophobia and Related Intolerance, made the remark during an interview with UN News on Tuesday, 14th of November, following her 14-day fact-finding mission on systematic racism in the United States. She said, "These manifestations of racism impacted those that racially marginalized groups at every stage of their lives, historically, systematically, and institutionally." The independent expert went on to say that selective amnesia was an issue in some states when it comes to reckoning with race and racism. K.P. Ashwini further noted that mainstream America is now more aware of systemic racism following the large-scale racial protests of 2020 and the promises from the Biden administration to improve racial equality in America. However, she said, racism very much persists in the United States and has manifested in different forms, adding that she was disheartened and disappointed by how systemic racism can impact the lives of individuals. K.P. Ashwini also stressed that one of the major worries is the dissemination of misinformation and disinformation, which further escalates racism, racial discrimination, hate crimes, and xenophobia. She added, "I think the moment and the space to talk this challenge forward to eliminate and eradicate racism or racial discrimination should be taken very positively, in a mindful manner." Ashwini traveled across the United States between 31st of October and 14th of November, from Detroit, Michigan, to the Louisiana coast, also visiting Los Angeles, Atlanta, and Washington, D.C. She explained that fact-finding mission in the U.S. was her first official country mission, and the purpose was to assess the country's situation, and her mandate covered racism, racial discrimination, and xenophobia. The United Nations Special Rapporteur further stated that she will surely elaborate on her findings in the report that will be presented next year at the United Nations Human Rights Council. The website of United Nations News has also covered the same story and tells us more. United Nations appointed independent rights experts are saying police and criminal justice system in the United States require urgent reform to eradicate systemic racism against people of African descent. A new report by the United Nations International Experts Advancing Racial Justice and Equality in Policing, published after an official visit to the country, shows that black people in the United States are three times more likely to be killed by police than if they were white, with 4.5 times more likely to be incarcerated. Dr. Tracy Kesey, an expert member of the task force, said the testimonies she heard on how victims do not get justice or redress were heartbreaking and unacceptable. She added, "All actors involved, including police departments and police unions, must join forces to combat the prevailing impunity." During their country visit, the experts heard testimonies from 133 affected individuals, visited five detention centers, and held meetings with civil society groups, as well as government and police authorities in the districts of Columbia, in Atlanta, Georgia, Los Angeles, California, Chicago, Illinois, Minneapolis, and New York City. They say racism in the United States, a legacy of slavery, the slave trade, and 100 years of legalized apartheid that followed slavery's abolition continue to exist in the form of racial profiling, police killings, and many other human rights violations. The experts condemn the appalling overrepresentation of people of African descent in America's criminal justice system. They express concern over instances of children from the diaspora being sentenced to life imprisonment, pregnant women in prison being chained during childbirth, and persons held in solitary confinement for 10 years or more. The report notes that there are more than 1,000 cases of killings by police officers each year in America, but only 1% result in police officers being charged. The experts warn that if use of force regulations in the United States are not reformed in accordance with international standards, killing by police officers will continue. Professor Juan Mendez, an expert member of the mechanism, said, "We reject the bad apple theory. There is strong evidence suggesting that the abusive behavior of some individual police officers is part of a broader and menacing pattern." Professor Mendez stressed that the police and justice system reflect the attitudes prevalent in U.S. society and institutions and called for comprehensive reform. The report's authors insist that armed police officers should not be default first responders to every social issue in the United States, including mental health crises or homelessness, and called for alternative responses to policing. The human rights experts heightened the burden of a workload on police officers, as well as systemic racism within police departments, which need to be addressed. The report made 30 recommendations to the United States and all of its jurisdictions, including more than 18,000 police agencies in the country. It also highlighted local and federal good practices. Professor Juan Mendez said, "We encourage the good practices to be reproduced in other parts of the country. We look forward to continuing to cooperate with the United States to implement these recommendations." The website Axios.com has also covered the same story and tells us more. According to a new survey, most Americans believe companies are not meeting the promises they have made to fight racism in their organizations and in general. A report from the global communications firm Edelman, which was first reported by Axios, found that 62% of respondents think companies are doing a mediocre or worse job fighting racism, up 8 percentage points from a survey last year. Edelman compiled the report as part of its annual Trust Barometer, which studies the levels of trust that the public has in various institutions like government, media, business, and non-governmental organizations. The report focused on the intersection of business and racial justice. Researchers found 60% of executives believe their organization has made a lot of meaningful progress on addressing racism and racial inequalities. But that contrasts with only 28% of mid-level employees and 18% of associated employees saying the same. But the report did find that companies addressing racism is important to the respondents, with almost 70% saying they are worried about systemic racism and racial injustice, up 8 percentage points from last year. Employees were also much more likely to indicate that they want to stay with a company for many years if their employer is making a lot of progress on addressing racism and racial inequalities at the workplace. Likewise, 85% of those who said their employer is making a lot of progress want to stay, while only 46% of those who said their employer is making no progress said the same. Researchers found all major institutions are not trusted to do what is right when responding to systemic racism and racial injustice in the country. Only 47% said they trust businesses and non-governmental organizations, 38% trust media, and 37% trust the government.
option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. It has now been more than a month and a half since the Zionist regime has started its Holocaust in the concentration camp of Gaza, with over 12,000 people killed and just about half of them children. The regime is in the process of destroying itself as people around the world are waking up to the reality of its illegality. But not only is the world waking up to the Zionists, but to those who support them. As the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, has said and has reiterated that the genocide in Gaza has blown the lid off of the reality of not only this racist regime, but the support of racism by Western countries. Stay with us as we look at this and a lot more on this Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Out of Houston, Texas, human rights activist Mohsen Naqvi. And out of Bristow, historian and investigative journalist Tony Gosling. Well, thank you both for being with me. Let me start this off in Houston. Mohsen, would you say the bottom line of the situation in Gaza, it's about race. It's about that the Zionists think that they are better than everyone else.
Hi, good afternoon. The Zionist, innately, the concept of Zionists and the concept of them thinking that they have to have a separate homeland is obviously in contradiction with the Jewish belief of the Jews being in exile and that they will only find their homeland after the return of the Messiah. There's this other concept of tikkun olam, meaning repairing the world. And it's innately found in Judaism, but I think the Zionists have really misinterpreted or have used this concept of reparation of the world and being the chosen ones to really sell the idea of a separate homeland of an Israeli state. And I think the way they justify the atrocities that they commit throughout the world, especially on the Palestinians, and that may be Palestinian Muslims or even Palestinian Christians, is through this idea that the Zionists are the chosen ones, and it is their own it is the responsibility of the Zionists to repair this world. I think it's a gross misinterpretation of the Jewish faith, but it is definitely used by the Zionist ideology to justify their actions to their own people. But we see that within the Zionist regime, there are many dissenting voices who disagree with this notion.
Right. Well, Tony, I want to talk about the hypocrisy of what we're seeing with this genocide in general, the Western regimes, the way that they reacted to Russia and the war in Ukraine. And when we compare to the reaction to the Israeli onslaught on Gaza, do you see racism playing any part in this? Or just give me your overall perspective in comparing the two and how it's been handled.
Well, I mean, it is extraordinary here in Britain to see our leaders so completely out of tune with the population who've been turning up in their hundreds of thousands on the streets to support those in Palestine. And actually, I think this week we saw one of the most incredible speeches by President Erdogan, where he's saying that there is absolutely no excuse to treat civilians in the way that Israelis are treating the Palestinians, and that this is one of the worst, and I would agree with him, one of the worst and most obvious cases of genocide in the history of civilization. Because we're living in the modern world, there's no excuses for getting things wrong and making mistakes. Look, the point is that there's almost a religious aspect to the way that the Western leaders like Biden and Sunak have been supporting and following and supplying arms to the Israeli genocide. And that's, I think, one of the most important aspects to understand why it is that they are so hell-bent on helping this genocide. I don't think it's necessarily motivated by racism, but certainly by some sort of religious aim. I mean, look at the psychopathic nature of what the Israelis have been saying over the last few weeks. They're talking about, basically they've been accusing everyone else, mostly the Palestinians, of committing the crimes that they're committing. So they are behaving, the Israelis, like a kind of, not a chosen people, but a master race, like the Nazis, saying effectively that anybody else's life is worth nothing, or they are likening the Palestinians to animals. And so they are the ones behaving like Nazis, not those that they are accusing. They're accusing the British people in the Palestinian marches.
But at the same time, Tony, sorry to jump in here. It is true. We know about unbelievable comments by this regime. But if we look at the way, whether we're talking about the UK, the US, France, Germany, how they have responded, it's been totally different from the way they responded with, when we look at, again, with the Russian-Ukraine situation, you're talking about a world of difference. I mean, if we look at statistically, we're talking about 6 weeks, over 12,000 people, but still not even close to the reaction that we saw coming out of these Western regimes, even the first month after Russia invaded Ukraine. Your thoughts on why there's such a difference?
Well, look, the difference is this is a war that we support, the Ukraine side. I mean, if you look at the actual barbarism involved by the Russian invasion of Ukraine, you're seeing the same number of civilian casualties over nearly 2 years as we have just in a few weeks in Gaza. So there is really no excuse to be sending soldiers down the streets shooting teenagers in the head for no reason. Innocent people being shot in the head by soldiers. This is not the way the Russians have been conducting things. But I think there's a much wider plan. And as I say, we've got such incredible hypocrisy by the Israelis. They seem to think that they can simply get away with this because of their influence within the Western press. So they're trying to use TV news lies in order to get away with this genocide. I'm afraid we're living in the internet age now, and people all around the world, actually, if they bother to check, can see exactly what the Israelis are up to.
Okay, well, Mohsen, on the one side, I've talked about these Western regimes. If we look, though, at the Islamic countries. Now, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, has said that Islamic countries must cut ties with Israel. Any of them that have ties definitely should cut ties. And we see that some of these countries are still either giving access to airspace, giving gas, helping the Israeli regime. I want to talk about that side of things and the importance of at least these Muslim countries in actually not supporting the regime in any way.
Absolutely. So as Imam Khamenei has pointed out, that it is essential that all Muslim countries boycott the Zionist regime. And when he says boycott, as you mentioned, it does mean that airspace of Muslim countries should not, as a matter of principle, be used to bomb innocent Palestinians. If that airspace is not used, and if that support is not given to the Zionist regime in the region of West Asia, there is no way for the Zionist regime or the U.S. empire to have any kind of diplomatic or military influence in this region. To give you a small example, why is the Rafah crossing still closed? Why aren't innocent Palestinians being allowed to be treated? Why isn't Egypt opening its borders? Why is it that in the OIC summit, nothing conclusive came out? Why is it that we only saw Iraq, Iran, and Syria giving out statements, cohesive statements, against the Zionist regime? Why do we see Yemen as a country fully involved in this conflict and now attacking the Zionist regime with their missiles? Where is Saudi Arabia and where is the UAE? These countries, it's high time that they play a constructive role in this conflict. They have the resources, they have the power. Or they don't have the power because their kingdoms are being supported or are highly influenced by the U.S. empire. So it is but a natural understanding that those countries that call themselves Muslims, it is but natural for them to speak up against the Zionist regime, to act against the Zionist regime, if they consider themselves as Muslim governments.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Tony, your thoughts on that, because we're seeing with a lot of these Muslim countries, sometimes some of them are speaking well in condemning the Israelis, but at the same time still supporting the Israeli regime. Because, I mean, if we look at the situation and who a lot of these leaders are and who put them in place, I think that it's understandable why they are acting perhaps in the way they are. But I also want to look at the mass movement that we're seeing in a lot of countries and the possible effect that that could also have on these Muslim leaders who have are basically supporting the regime in one way or another.
Well, that's two questions. One is on the religious aspects. Let's have a look at China, for example, which is a big supporter of Palestine. Obviously, it's a long, long way away, but it's a superpower with a lot of clout. Now, they're not Muslims. So I think if you're looking at the mass movements on the streets, you won't see so much in China because the Chinese authorities don't like that. But you're seeing lots right across the West. I think there is an attempt, Marcia, to frame this as a Jewish versus Islam battle. Actually, I think it's nothing of the sort, because Netanyahu is certainly not one of God's chosen people. He's not acting in any way along the lines of the Ten Commandments that Moses has given to his people. He's just ignoring them. And so what you're seeing, I think, is an attempt to weaponize Judaism and to start a religious war. So I think we've got to be quite careful here in framing it as a religious conflict, because this will tend to turn people of different faiths onto different sides. Actually, certainly here in Britain, people of all faiths have been out on these marches, including Jews, Christians and Muslims on the streets of London, all coming together to oppose what is essentially and actually an anti-Abrahamic faith war that the Greater Israel bloc has been launching against Gaza, and in such a horrific fashion that I don't think anybody with any common sense would ever interpret the Israeli government as having anything to do whatsoever with God. In fact, possibly, the other side.
Right.
From they are actually, what they're doing is evil. It's not mistaken. It's not, some sort of error that they've made. It is most definitely deliberate killing of civilians, which can only be described as evil. Nothing to do whatever with God.
Right, indeed. Well, Mohsen, we talked about as far as some of these Muslim countries and actually not doing what they're saying. But I want to look at another country. I want to look at Yemen. Because on the one hand, it's a country perhaps with not a lot. I mean, compared to if we're looking at some of the Persian Gulf countries and others. But at the same time, extremely dedicated. And we have reports I'm sure that you've heard that they actually got an Israeli ship in the Red Sea, and it's in response to the massacre of the Palestinians in Gaza. I want to talk about that side of things. First of all, with their potential in being able to do this, and also their dedication in supporting their Arab and Muslim brothers here.
Absolutely. I mean, what Yemen is doing is absolutely unprecedented. The more we praise them, it's less. And Sayyid Nasrallah also mentioned in his speech, he differentiated Hezbollah, the Hashd al-Shaabi, as being separate entities from the government. They don't really represent the government as such. Whereas Yemen, the Ansarullah, the Houthis, they are part of the government. The actions that the Yemenis are taking are government actions. So it has more repercussions. And keeping those repercussions in mind, we need to understand that Yemen has been under... it was in war with Saudi Arabia and was heavily under the bombardment of the Saudis. Yet after that war has ended, thanks to the Islamic Republic, we see them immediately engage in this conflict. Diplomatically, it doesn't make sense, technically, if you think about it. The only justification that we can have of Yemen really physically involving themselves in this conflict by saying that they will, by giving out a statement and saying that they will target all ships owned and operated by Israeli companies. No one else is doing this. It is because this is a government that makes decisions based on genuine principles. They genuinely stand with the Palestinians. And we saw that even when Yemen was under heavy bombardment, they never refrained from supporting the Palestinians. From day one, we have seen Yemen involving themselves in this conflict physically. And so it is something that really countries like Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Qatar, Kuwait, they really need to understand that the times have changed. The times when kingdoms who were acting as U.S. puppets in the region, that's not the future of West Asia. There's a huge shift that we see. And the narrative and the stances that countries like Yemen, Iran, Iraq, Syria are taking is the future of this region of West Asia, where we want to see Islamic countries, Muslims, Arabs, be sovereign and independent without the influence of British colonialism or U.S. imperialism.
Well, Tony, we've seen what the Israeli regime has done in Gaza and basically targeted kids and just civilians in general. And now, militarily, from a military perspective, it's definitely not been a success. I want to talk about, or we're going to end the show with this comment of yours, in looking at the Israeli regime and how this situation in Gaza will actually has weakened it. I want your perspective in general. Weakened it, and has it weakened it to a point of that it perhaps cannot recover from? Your thoughts in general.
Well, look at the irony, Marcia. The irony is incredible. The Israeli government is accusing Hamas of trying to destroy Israel. The one entity that is doing its best to destroy Israel is actually the Israeli government. They are the most likely organization on this planet to bring about an end to the Zionist state is the Israeli government itself, because the way they're acting is actually encouraging so much opposition in those neighboring states. They are also accusing Hamas of killing hostages. Actually, it's them that's killing hostages. So we're dealing with basically a bunch of psychopaths that are trying their best to create even a wider war. That is to drag in the Americans and the Russians, to maybe drag in even the Chinese, in order to keep Benjamin Netanyahu, the crime minister, out of jail. And to be fair, the Israeli public have been making a big fuss and protesting about this ever all this year, saying this guy is turning into a dictator. The only thing is that the rest of the world have to act, I think, somehow to help the Israeli population to put their maniac prime minister in jail.
Where is this going? Tony, let me just jump in here. I don't have much time. But is this just, because this is very important, is this just a Netanyahu framing of this? Is it just Netanyahu that is behind this? I mean, when we see this entire Israeli regime and what it's doing, it's not just one man. It is not just one man that is doing, but go ahead.
There are other voices in the Knesset, but of course what's happened is Netanyahu's brought all of the far right around him now to defend him. So I think it would send a very strong message to the rest of the Israeli politicians if justice was done with Netanyahu. Ultimately, though, I think it's in the balance as to whether this war will extend, and I think it's very good to see many of these Arab states keeping out of this, knowing that the Israelis are trying to set a trap for them because they actually want a wider war. They want to drag the United States in here.
All right, and on that note, I thank both of you being with me. Mohsen Naqvi, human rights activist out of Houston, Texas. Tony Gosling, historian and investigative journalist out of Bristol. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on Another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing off myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Hope to see you right here next time.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.